Welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me is Maria. How are you?
Very well, thank you. You?
I'm very good, thank you. And also special guest, Anthony Piovesan. How are you?
Hello, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
It's our absolute pleasure, Anthony. And for our listeners, Anthony comes from Australia. He's a journalist, and we're so excited to talk to him about his writing journey and also his literal journey from one continent to another. And we'll use that as our jumping off point. Anthony, let's ask you this. Why did you come to Spain, and how different or similar is this country to Australia?
Well, you might need a heavy red, a heavy tempranillo for me to explain. But no, coming to Spain was both a professional and personal decision. So let me start off professionally. I always say that I had wings ever since I was young. You know, I always had a curiosity for the world. I always wanted to go out and explore and see things and meet people and do things. And that then led into me becoming a journalist, because I knew it was a job that I could take beyond the borders of my home country. And then, having worked as a journalist in Australia, I thought, well, something's missing here. And, journalism has led me to some pretty exciting places within the borders of my home country. So why not follow it and see where it takes me, and why not go into the opposite hemisphere? So professionally, that's why I wanted to make the move. Personally, it was a bit of a poke in the darkness. I had previously been to Spain on holiday, and I had always really had a fantastic time. I'd met some beautiful people, had some wonderful experiences, and it really left a mark on me. And so I thought, well, why not? It was a feeling. It was certainly not the first time I followed a feeling, and it won't be the last. And I guess why Spain? Well, yeah, culturally it's just so exciting, and there's such a rich history, and I just wanted to be a part of that. And I guess, you know, when you look at the differences between Spain and Australia, they're completely different, vastly different. I look at Australia as a very modern country. It's almost like the new world when you compare it to Europe. And in that, it's really offered a lot of opportunity, and you really can have some amazing experiences with study, with work, and it can set you up for life. And it certainly set me up for this opportunity. But I think Spain just ties into my romantic personality a little bit more. And, you know, I'm looking out now from my balcony, and I can see the Mediterranean Sea. I can see the mountains of the Serenia de Navarra. I can go down the road to Malaga, you know, the birthplace of Pablo Picasso. And, you know, I just feel like I'm steeped in history and beauty here. And that's what really inspires me every single day.
That's very nice, Anthony. Actually, I think it's also nice for the listeners, because we tend to talk to a lot of people that they came here, and for some reason, you know, well, they came here to something, and then they just stayed for many years. But yours was quite nice, because you weren't really planning on coming. You sort of like followed a feeling and then stayed. So a little bit different, so that's quite nice. But obviously you're in the south of Spain, so, well, you've given us a description there that I'm sure many listeners would be very, very jealous of what you can see outside your window. But how about the people you have found there? I mean, you were talking about opportunities. As a writer, have you found that there is a community there of other people that perhaps are similar to you somehow, or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think I'm extremely fortunate where I've not only found a community of like-minded writers, but also a community of like-minded people. I mean, for me, the two are very different sometimes. And with a community of like-minded people, I've found that's come through me making the journey all on my own and having to put myself out there to find people who I can share this journey with. And that's been through joining sport clubs and through doing trips on my own and meeting people and going into bars and really not being afraid to listen to other people's stories and how they also ended up here and where they come from and what their personal journey is. And when I talk about a community of like-minded writers, that was a little bit more difficult to come by because it's a little bit more nuanced. And at the beginning of my journey in the south of Spain, I didn't think that I would meet many writers or English writers in the south of Spain. But gradually, as I became more set up here and my career here progressed, I discovered more people, and that led to me discovering the Costa del Sol Press Club, which I was amazed because I never thought that there would be actually a press club for English-speaking media professionals in the south of Spain. It's just something that I didn't expect would exist here. So it has, and then I've joined that, and I've gone along to a few meetings, and it's been a great opportunity. It's been a great eye-opener to understand how other people have forged their careers here and the possibilities that exist here.
And speaking of the opportunities and the writing, you have experienced both a career as a paid journalist and also as a freelancer as well. And just, you know, it's so fascinating because they're, in many senses, they're connected by their writing, but also one's perhaps more stable than the other. And maybe being a freelancer is exciting, but scary. Can you tell us a little bit about how these two experiences differ, one of being a paid journalist and one of being a freelancer?
I would say the main difference for me is stability and comfort. With being a paid journalist, you can expect a certain salary each month and workload. And that's very comforting. And I did appreciate that at the time. And I still do. I think it's something that I may go back into. It's not something that I disagree with or something that doesn't work for me. But I think freelancing teaches you to be a little bit more entrepreneurial. It forces you to learn the business side of journalism and marketing, which the two are extremely important and go hand in hand on many occasions. And I think being a freelancer just gets you out of your comfort zone a little bit more and you expand your skill set. You sometimes, well, certainly for me, I've been in situations where I haven't been earning what I've wanted to in a month. So that's forced me out of my comfort zone where I've been forced to write things that I never thought I would write as a journalist, you know. So for example, I've explored more into marketing, copywriting, content creation. And it surprised me that, you know, on some of those occasions I've actually enjoyed doing that. So that's now become part of my skill set. And that's contributed to confidence, and a confidence I probably would have never had if I didn't venture into freelancing. So I think freelancing is definitely the scarier road, but I think it's more rewarding personally because you come away with it with many skills which you never would have discovered had you not have gone down that pathway.
So it sounds like that's really made you a versatile writer. And your articles have already appeared in a lot of newspapers, regardless. So things like, you know, papers like the Daily Telegraph or the New York Post, so really famous newspapers across the world. So how does it feel for you to have been able to reach that, such an international audience?
Honestly, I don't look at who reads my stories, but it is a bonus. that my stories are far reaching and I do have a global audience. That definitely is something I'm proud of. But it's not the first thing I look at. I think what's important for me is the story itself and the people I'm writing about and caring about the issue at hand. Because ultimately you don't get to write a story without the people and without the people who help you, give you information and who tell you their stories. So for me, it's actually extremely humbling that I'm in a position where I'm able to tell their story and tell it to the world, and hopefully it can inspire people.
And I think more people, yeah, are definitely moving towards freelancing. And you just mentioned there the global reach of your stories. And I wanted to ask you about that as well, because the internet has changed journalism to an extent that more people are consuming content online rather than in physical papers, and also has led to a situation where any blogger can potentially call themselves a journalist for good or for ill. So I'm just very curious, Anthony, how would you define the term? What is a journalist for you?
Someone who's been to school and trained as a journalist. I think that's very important. But also someone who's at least had some newsroom experience, because I think what that teaches you is the ethics on how to be an ethical journalist and to understand how to do the job with integrity. And I think bloggers, they may come from a writing background, but they don't have that understanding about what it means to be a journalist, about how they're the third body, about why it is crucial to question authority and to show a commitment to the truth. So I think ultimately a journalist is someone who is qualified, has trained, or has relevant newsroom experience, but also is someone with a moral compass and is committed to finding the truth.
Well, that seems like a very important aspect, especially in the world nowadays, because, you know, it's always I would say something that people complain about sometimes about journalism, that, you know, some lines get crossed, and so it's obviously a very important topic. But I think it ties in as well with the next question we were going to ask you, which is about fake news. And then I wrote a book some years ago about fake news. So when we were researching it, it's just shocking how much disinformation there is, and there has been in recent years. But you know quite a bit about that. You've received several awards, I believe, for doing research journalism. So in 2019, you got the Queen's Melbourne Press Club Award, and I think one of the things that you were praised for was separating fact from fiction. Also, I believe your story on like the pandemic as well, also got you placing in as a finalist in 2020. So, how prevalent do you think fake news are these days, and how dangerous do you think they are? And from a journalistic point of view, what do you feel is possible to do to tackle them? Mm. That's not too big a question.
No, I'll try my best to break that down. It's a huge topic. And that's it. Fake news is something that's extremely prevalent. I mean, I think it's ongoing all day, every week, every month. And, you know, sad to say, but, you know, for many years to come, hopefully not. But I think, you know, the internet is helping propel fake news. And you see fake news hit all the major, most sensitive issues and crises in the world. I mean, we saw it with the Biden-Trump election. We saw it with the coronavirus pandemic. We see it continuously with the Ukraine-Russia conflict and the Israel-Gaza conflict. So, you know, I'll give you a recent example, if I can, in my home country. Just a few days ago, there was a man who stabbed 6 people to death at a large shopping center in Sydney. And at the time, there was just so much panic because no one knew what was going on. It was just pandemonium. But there was social media commentary, and that was based off of images that had surfaced online. And these images were quite grainy, but they were showing this man who was going around stabbing people. And suddenly the commentary was saying that he looked Israeli. And I think that was just based off the narrative that where he had committed this crime was in a suburb where there were a lot of Muslims and Jews living. So it kind of straight away, it got off on the wrong foot. It set the wrong narrative, and it spread like wildfire, as many things do on social media. And that's what a lot of people were saying, what was happening there. And it wasn't the case. It had nothing to do with cultural identity. And I think the problem with social media is that a lot of social media figures who have a following and a large following base, which are people who spread fake news, they then make a commentary. And then because they've got credence because of their followers or their follower base, media outlets start to publish what they're saying. So then before you know, it's hit the mainstream media. And it's all completely false. And it just happens within minutes of an event happening. So it's extremely dangerous, because if you look at that example and turn it into a big political narrative like the Biden-Trump election, I mean, it distorts your view on what's actually happening in the world, and it distorts your view on the political landscape, and it affects votes, it affects who we're putting in power and who we are giving the permission to affect policy and affect the way we live our lives. And even just, you know, it's a threat to humanity. I mean, how easily now we fool ourselves into believing falsehoods. I mean, it really seems sometimes like we are living in a post-truth era, which is really sad, because you know, I would like to think that I live in a society where people value the truth and want to know what's going on and want to question authority and don't just look at something for face value. So how do we tackle that? I wish I had the answer, but all I know is that you just have to remain committed to finding the truth. And if you can stop one person from believing fake news, and then hopefully that one person then spreads on the correct version, then you're doing your job, you're doing your part, and that's all I can do. As far as the world, well, I think it's up to a lot of people and their responsibility on understanding right from wrong.
And Anthony, just to ask you the last question here, we've touched on some big topics here, some positive, like the truth and being an ethical journalist, and some scary ones like fake news, which you just spoke about. So my last question, I guess, is finishing on a nice sentiment, because it seems to me, from having spoken to you before, that in journalism, that, you know, journalists that are coming through very often get guidance and direction from older journalists. There's like a mentorship there. And a passing of the torch as well. And that's quite a nice sentiment, I think. Could you tell us more about your experiences of this relationship?
Yeah, I mean, when younger journalists come to me for advice, the first thing I tell them is that I'm very far from an expert. and I do want them to go and get advice from other journalists with, you know, varied age, from varied corners of the industry, because it is such a diverse industry. And I think that the more people you talk to for advice and to be a mentor, the more you are informed about where journalism is heading and the possibilities and what you would like to do personally as a journalist and what you would like to conquer. So I always tell them that because that's what's happened with me. I've always had multiple people who I look up to as mentors, and they are often writing completely different things to each other in completely different ends of the earth. And I guess based off of my experience, I always tell them to just never stop pursuing the truth and to believe in the truth and show a commitment to the truth. And also just sometimes what you might think is the most logical thing doesn't mean that's the actual story. Sometimes you just have to allow yourself to be surprised, and whilst making a commitment to discovering the truth, I think is what I try to tell younger journalists.
Anthony, myself and Maria, we both really admire and respect the journalism work that you've done and your commitment to these wonderful things like telling the truth and being deterred of state and upholding those virtues of journalism. But for the time being, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Anthony.